Jerome Ringo is an African American. His current job is chair and CEO of an organization called Natural Power Concepts. But he has been a leader in the environmental movement in this country, which is unusual because usually you don't see, men or women of color, in the front ranks of the environmental movement in America. He was the first African American to head the National Wildlife Federation's board of directors, and he probably has some things to say about protecting our deer out at Eagle Creek Park. He has just been, he's done a whole lot of things since he started out being an outstanding Boy Scout way, way back in the day. But he is here in Indianapolis to speak a little later this afternoon over at the IU Law School and then later at the Anthoneum downtown. And Jerome Ringo is joined by Jim Poyser, who is with Earth Charter Indiana, and Denise Abdul-Rahman, who is the head of the NAACP's Environmental Justice and trying to protect Indiana from all sorts of environmental disasters committee. Guys, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You, Jerome Ringo, are a rare individual that we don't see a lot of persons of color in the environmental movement. Why do you think that is?
Well, Amos, it's quite unfortunate considering that we are the most impacted when it comes to poor environmental practices, but we are clearly left out of the process of making those decisions. It's surely not because we don't have knowledge of environmental impact. We're the victims. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, environmental organizations that were all formed back in the 30s were mainly sportsmen, people that would fish and hunt and hang the fish on the wall. Those folks like us who back then would hang the fish on the plate did not join clubs. So therefore,
we were frying the fish
down in Mississippi and Louisiana, where I'm from. And so the movement has evolved into a movement that surely African Americans and poor people care about the environment, but our list of priorities consists more of those quality of life issues. How do I pay next month's rent? Mm-hmm. How do I keep a job? How do I get health care for my kids? And so even though we do care about the environment, it is not a top priority within our communities.
Is one of the efforts that in the environmental community needs to do a better job of is try to figure out how to link environmentalism and environmental protection to neighborhood redevelopment and try to get governments, whether it's municipal governments or state governments or even the federal government, to make these investments to turn neighborhoods around that can't get the reinvestment because there's all this gunk that's seeped into the ground from the industry that were in those older neighborhoods 30, 40, 50, 100 years ago.
Amos, you've got it, and you've answered the question. If we can make those links, where one, people see that there's economic value in going green, is more than just about health protection, improving, reducing cancers or reducing asthmas. When we invest money into green development, we create jobs. We create jobs opportunity along with improving the quality of life. But it's going to require a level of education within our communities so that our communities understand the value of going green, but there has to be a commitment in the private sector to invest into those communities, realizing that they too will make money, but at the same time do something that's in the best interest of improving the quality of life of the people that they're adversely impacting.
Is it also in terms of environmentalism maybe showing our community that, gee, if you run your heater in the furnace in your house at 80 instead of 90 in the winter, not only is you're helping the environment, but you're going to save some money and be able to not only pay the gas bill, but you might be able to hit that water bill at the same time.
Those forms of education are very important, but the reality is, as I've shared in many of my speeches, many people in suburban communities build their homes that are already energy efficient. They have double insulated glass. They have adequate insulation. They can turn those units on one time per day, run it for 1 hour, and turn it off, and the house is cool for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. But down in hood where you don't have double insulated glass.
You're in that 100-year-old house.
You're in that 100-year-old house, screens pulled off the windows, off of the doors, cracks in the doors. Unfortunately, you've got to run that unit almost round the clock just to be comfortable. So that we have to take full advantage of opportunities to weatherize our homes, understand why it's important that we weatherize, first of all, take advantage of the audit programs that we can determine how much weatherization we need. But weatherize those homes so those homes can be energy efficient. And then we learn the principles and how to operate more efficiently to reduce our costs.
Jim Heuser, what is Earth Charter Indiana?
Earth Charter Indiana is a statewide nonprofit. We work on a variety of issues, peace and justice issues. Political transparency is very important to us, restoring the democratic process, getting people involved. We're heavily involved in climate issues right now through two programs, Sustainable Indiana 2016, celebrating sustainable activities across the state of Indiana, and then our brand new program, Youth Power Indiana, engaging kids in climate stewardship and civic engagement.
How important is it? It's one of the things that African Americans in the last 60 days learned to understand was the situation in Ferguson, not the murder, but the fact that it's a majority black town and the majority sat home every time it was a local election and the other side won and they suddenly wake up and have no representation, but they have the power. How important is it on these issues of the environment that affect jobs and stuff that people vote in elections like this year and next year, not just when Barack Obama's successor runs in 2 years?
You've got it there. What I like to point out whenever I'm in a public situation, I like to point out that not only have our kids become disconnected from nature, they become disconnected from democracy. And we have to put those two things together. What was the percentage of voters who actually voted in the primary in May? I'm sure you know that's like 13%,
yeah, 13%,
right?
Yeah.
People just aren't engaging. 71% of young people polled, 71% said politicians are not listening to them. And we're all here trying to change that.
239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's names with Jerome Ringo. Jim Poyser. Jim Poyser's with Earth Charter Indiana. Jerome Ringo, a very highly visible African American involved in the in environmental issues and environmental organizations in our country. And Denise Abdul Rahman with the NAACP. 239-1310. 239-1310. Let me ask Denise, and then Jerome may want to weigh in on some of these environmental issues that we're dealing with here in Indianapolis. One, you've been battling the light company. I mean, I'm surprised you still have lights on and they have just not disconnected your lights just on GP. Where, in terms of what the NAACP has been asking Indianapolis Power and Light, where are you? They announced one thing where they weren't, gonna rely on some coal-fired plant. Where are we now with some of those issues?
The latest information is that IPL announced, I believe it was August the 15th, that they would switch over to stop burning coal and to start utilizing natural gas. At the Harding Street.
Okay.
Plant. And so many of us consider that to be a victory.
Mm-hmm.
Advocacy of the NAACP was that we believe that our communities were in a fierce urgency of now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we asked the City County Council to amend their resolution and to call for 2016 as opposed to 2020. And we believe that our advocacy was instrumental in helping to convince IPL to consider retiring burning coal by 2016. We have had conversations with Kelly Huntington,
mm-hmm.
and we will be
That's the head of IPL here.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And we will be at the third advisory hearing that will be occurring in October.
One of the other issues with that I think you were involved in, correct me if I'm wrong, with IPL was the tax that they wanted to put on all IPL customers to pay for the French blue Indy cars, which even though they're electric cars, they want us to pay for the infrastructure. Are you all starting to get concerned about the proposal that if we build this bus rapid transit, the Red Line, it would be electric buses, but not the wires at the top. It would be some kind of electric gizmo in the ground. Are you all concerned that we may be confronted again with a proposal from the city and IPL that IPL customers pay for the infrastructure of that?
I certainly believe that that was probably part of perhaps the compromising. Mm-hmm. But NAACP position is still that we oppose the utilization of fossil fuel, and these electric cars are still going to be tied to the grid of IPL. And so it's kind of a moot point if you consider yourself honing into clean energy. That's the whole point of electric cars, is to eliminate emissions, vehicle emissions, but now you're going to basically utilize vehicle emissions through natural gas burning. So we will still advocate to try to change that and to get IPL to use more clean and renewable energy.
Jerome Ringo, is this effort by cities and utilities to make all customers pay for the cost of the infrastructure to support electric cars? Is that a fair charge for electric customers, or should that be something the electric utility eats?
I think it's a total unfair charge to the customer. I think the utility companies probably look at it as an unfunded mandate, mm-hmm. that they are mandated to reduce their CO2 to the atmosphere, but yet they want us to pay for it. Mm-hmm. If they have polluted in the past, then we should not pay them to pollute. If they are required to clean it up or to change the way they operate, mm-hmm. reduce their CO2 to the atmosphere, they should take that out of the profits of the company. When you talk about Indiana in particular and the impacts of the changing environment, as you can see, was part of the negotiations on climate change, both in Kyoto and Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. We are now dealing with climatic variations like we've never seen before, colder winters, mm-hmm. much hotter summers. We're now more of a two-season world instead of four seasons with mm-hmm. summer or winter. It's hot or cold. We're now
These kind of things are not just occurring in this country. This is occurring across the globe?
Globally. And we're now experiencing the 10 hottest summers in recorded history have occurred since 2001. 2005 was the hottest summer in recorded history. They're expected that next summer will break that record. 2008 was the coldest winter in recorded history. They're expecting winter 2014 to break that record. And the people that would be most adversely affected will be the people who have less access to the energy resources to either keep them cool or keep them warm. That's poor people. So therefore, it is important that the power companies, in an effort to reduce CO2 to the atmosphere, in an effort to make it to level the playing field for the poorest who pay high energy bills, that they should take on the responsibility and to fix this problem and no longer cause poor people to be the sacrificial lamb.
239-1310 is after his name. Jim Poyser, what is the biggest, other than Indiana still using Indiana coal, what's the biggest environmental threat in this state?
Well, we have a lot of sources of fossil fuel pollution. Agriculture is a huge source. Nitrous oxide used in farming and fertilizer. Of course, we have a lot of methane being emitted by our animals. And I want to just stay on agriculture for a second, because I think that's one of our greatest opportunities for carbon restoration. Soil has an enormous capacity to sink carbons. And if we're just growing the same crop year in, year out, we're draining that soil of nutrients. We're draining that soil of the capacity to sink carbon. If we were using more cover crops, if we were rotating our crops, if we were doing companion planting. I know it's a huge industry, and it sounds impossible, but when you think about the great heritage of agriculture in Indiana and how we could focus in on that as an economic gain, as a way to restore the climate, I get excited when I think about it. Not a farmer. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure, not a farmer, yeah. But I get excited about that part of it.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you, I got stopped in the grocery store by somebody the other day, and they asked me, said, what are all these solar panels doing at the airport? What is that all about? Who's paying for that? Where does that power go? And we got to talking about solar, and we got to talking about wind. people kind of see that, but they have no conception of what that is being used for. Is one of the failings of environmentalism that people are aware, okay, the little things that look toward the sun, I've heard that solar power. They see the windmills if they're driving between here and Chicago once they get past West Lafayette, but they have no conception as to what that is really doing, and is that bringing power? Does that save the light bill at the airport? If they see a solar panel on a building, is that saving the light bill of that building? They don't see. Is that a benefit to us? Jerome Ringo, is that something that the country needs to do a better job of educating?
Absolutely, and we must understand. In the United States, we make up 5% of the world's population. We use 35% of the energy in the world, and we discharge 35% of the CO2 to the atmosphere. We must, as a country and as an industrialized nation, reduce the amount of energy that we're utilizing. America has a gluttonous appetite for energy. We have got to reduce that. And we also must stop polluting the air in the process. We know that energy needs must be satisfied. It is not a question of decreasing the energy need, which is important. Mm-hmm. But what is more a bigger question is how do we provide energy that is clean energy, that does not have adverse impacts on the people as in general, but mainly on the people that is in closest proximity to the facilities, and more time than not, that is us. You know, 2 out of 3 African Americans live within the same zip code of a landfill. 70% of minorities live in a county that is in violation of the Clean Water and Clean Air Act. We are the most impacted. Now we need to be more involved. But I think that the power companies must take on the responsibility, as they have been pretty much the problem in the way they generate energy and satisfy those energy needs, and coming up with innovative ways to minimize the impact on those that are impacted the most.
Aren't there examples? Because I know the Obama administration, the president has talked a lot about renewable energy and jobs will be created, blah, 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 blah. And I'm not saying that in a negative. He's talked about that a lot. Aren't there examples of where alternative energy has been put into communities of color, and those communities have actually seen jobs created, that, you know, Denise and Jim can look and say, hey, Portland is doing this, or Spokane is doing this, or somebody in Mississippi is doing this, to be able to say we can do this here in the 13th largest black community in the country.
Well, the leadership of the president was large scale, and that was the first step. The president, of course, under the stimulus package, allocated $110 billion toward green and renewable energy development. A lot of that money was earmarked for communities. Unfortunately, it was received by the states, who redirected much of that money into the general fund, and it never reached the communities of which it was intended. But yes, there are success.
States don't do that.
And so, unfortunately, that happened. But there are success stories, not many, mm-hmm. nowhere near enough. The great work that's being done in Oakland, California, through Green for All and the Ella Baker Foundation, Van Jones and his great work there, teaching young people how to build and install solar panels. You've got manufacturing plants in Arkansas that are building wind turbines, but surely not on a scale that could make a change and be an example of a real success story, because now there's a new battle taking place. Mm-hmm. There used to be the battle of who would be, or which country would be the oil capital or the oil supplier of the world. Now countries like China are positioning themselves to be the green component supplier of the world. So
wait, they're burning more energy almost than we are in terms of per capita, but they want to supply the goods to do it, but they don't have to do it themselves.
We invented solar panels in the United States, but 90% of the solar panel components are imported. We build wind turbines in the United States, but the majority of the components for those wind turbines are imported. And it's very, very clear that China wants to be the go-to country for components. So we're basically going to switch our dependency from oil to components. Basically, I call it switching seats on the Titanic. Mm-hmm. We must, as a country, begin to develop the infrastructure and have an infrastructure in place where we can stimulate American manufacturing around green jobs, which will stimulate the economy and communities on all economic levels, especially of the poor community.
All right. Jerome Ringo is speaking later this afternoon over at the IU Law School. What time?
At 5:30.
5:30 over at the IU Law School, the Inlow Law School at the corner of Vermont, New York Street and West Street. And then a little later he's going to be at the Athenaeum, right across the street from the Marat.
That's right. We have a free event.
Oh, free. Oh, everybody loves free.
Featuring Joe Maringo, but we also have youth speakers. We have Andrea Bozak, 15-year-old student at International School, going to be talking about climate change in South Africa. Iris O'Donnell, a student at Gambold High School. Hmm. We have, she's going to be talking about policy and politics and getting youth engaged in civics. And we have Matt Davis, a local activist and poet. So we have youth speaking. It's going to be a very, very inspiring an evening for all of us.
Denise?
I just would like to add that we would urge the community to reach out to their local NAACP Indianapolis chapter, get involved in the environmental committee. We've done Just Energy, Reducing Pollution and Creating Jobs Town Hall. And in fact, the NAACP state, we are trying to advocate for what's called Just Solar Inclusion, where we want to do a model that puts solar onto a faith-based organization, create solar training, perhaps hire a few ex-offenders. We wrote a white paper on it, and we are trying to get that particular piece funded. We want to partner and create jobs. We want to help with that poverty number of 1 million Hoosiers that are unemployed and living in poverty. And so we seek assistance and resources to help us to launch that, and we'd like to launch it statewide throughout Indianapolis and statewide.
All right. Jerome Ringo is with Natural Power. What is natural, real quickly, Natural Power Concepts?
We are a research and development group in Honolulu, Hawaii that are manufacturing renewable energy technologies, hydro, wind turbines. We have hurricane-proof wind turbines that will, the blades will close like a flower whenever the wind reaches.
Can it hang with an Indiana tornado?
It can hang with an Indiana tornado.
Now, see, she needs to bring some of those out here, and let's give it the real Midwestern.
That's the test.
Hawaii hurricane, yeah, Midwestern tornado. Now, if it can stand that, you got something going there.
That's an excellent point. The testing has mainly been with the oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico, but if we can handle an Indiana tornado,
or one of them real Oklahoma
tornadoes,
because that's where the Indians come. They start in Oklahoma and then they warm up here.
I think we're sitting with an Indiana tornado. Right here, Mr. Amos Brown.
Jerome Ringo with Natural Power Concepts, one of the most visible African Americans in the environmental movement in this country. Denise Abdul-Rahman with the NAACP and Jim Poyser with Earth Charter Indiana. Guys, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you, Amos, very much.